My name is Yaniv Korem. I'm here to study successful innovation professionals and uncover the mindset and models they use to de-risk the future. On this podcast, I invite fellow professors, practitioners, and entrepreneurs to have an honest conversation about the business of innovation. No more bullshit. We talk openly and honestly about what works and what doesn't. So come on, get your ass in that seat. School's about to start. Okay, Brian, let's get started. Going back to what you said about not knowing what to expect in terms of building an innovation agency, right? You sort of had a very childlike mind about that. I guess it was the same for me going into China, like stumbling into this big consultancy gig where someone said, hey, we're building something in Shanghai. Do you want to come and help us?
It's amazing. Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, sure. And I'm a guy from, you know, from Israel, from Tel Aviv. I've lived in the States for a few years, but that's all I knew. I knew the Western culture. And I think that if I had known what I was getting into, I might not have like been so quick to say yes.
Why would you say that? I mean,
no, because I mean, you know, after you get there and you're in it, right?
Yeah.
And you're going through this like very steep learning curve of like, okay, this is like, forget everything I knew. This is like learning everything from the beginning. Then you fall in love with it. But like, if I had known right out of context from here in Israel, from the safety of my home, right, I would have said, nah, why would I need that? Like, why do I need that? Like, you know, I can go somewhere else.
I think Shanghai and China in particular is a place where you go to unlearn, because it forces you to unlearn every expectation. It like reveals your expectations, right? Like
exactly.
As all travel does. But I mean, when you go to a place as different, let's just say, as China, you know, the way you, obviously language, but the way you act, the way you behave, the way others behave, and the other way others react, I think it's just opposite to what we like and what we're used to. Mm-hmm. And it forces you to reassess all your beliefs. And so I think, you know, subconsciously, I think that's what I was looking for too. I'm very, very excited, or like, it feels good to hear that the way you phrased it.
Yeah, it was, you know, definitely, I don't want to say a once in a lifetime experience, because I'm hoping, you know, I'm not going to die.
Oh, yeah.
Do it again. I want to do it again.
It forces growth. I mean, you know, whether it's China or Mars, right? Whatever it is.
Yeah. I fell in love with China, with Shanghai and Hong Kong. And it became a second home to me. I was there so much that, you know, you get a, like, you know, you feel it's home once you get off the airplane and you kind of know where to go, like without thinking about it.
Yeah.
So I was there. So definitely hoping to go back. I want to touch on the last, you know, sort of word in that mission statement. It's that big word, that N word, innovation word, that when you put that together with China, like, it doesn't really make sense, right? Like, everyone, when you think of China, thinks about the Shanzai culture, like the copycats and all of that, and you don't think about innovation. So is there innovation in China? And if there is it different than what we're used to or what we know in the West, you think?
Yeah, I think definitely it is very different. I mean, just by the political system, the situation that they were coming out of emerging from, and the cultural values of it. I think all of those contribute to it. And so what I mean by that, number one, the political system obviously is centralized government. I think when you have that kind of control, you can make decisions a lot more fast. And you can focus a lot of your energies on certain things. And so that helps to create an ecosystem instead of just having disconnected thoughts that aren't really disconnected organizations that don't really synergize with each other. And so, I mean, looking at Shenzhen and looking at and like Beijing and Shanghai as three different aspects of a larger ecosystem, Shenzhen within itself is great for hardware. Shanghai obviously has their the more of the financial arm, and maybe Beijing as well, but also with political. And Shanghai is more of the business side, the marketing business aspects for creativity and innovation, digital stuff. So I think all of that can only happen because there's a focused effort and money that's being given by a centralized place. So, you know, you can argue that it's bad or you can argue that it's good. I'm just saying that that is what it is. And that's an element of how it evolved. Another thing is coming out of where it came out of, there was a lot of really, really low cost labor. And I think that low cost labor gave birth to, you know, the startups that are like the, what's it called right now? I haven't been in China for a month and I already forgot everything. But the Olamas, the delivery services, and all the mobikes and all the manufacturing, that can only happen because there's a low labor cost. And that is contributing to these type of startups, these, you know, this crazy scale of startups that we can't really imagine in the West. And then number three, the cultural values. What I mean by that is, you can call that the Shanzai, but I think, you know, going back to it is very practical and people are going to use whatever they can to make something work. And whether that means, you know, copying or borrowing, but copying and borrowing with a slight twist. And if you do that enough, and if you do that to a grand enough scale, it becomes something completely different, something unrecognizable. And I think that's what happened with Tencent and WeChat and Xiaomi. I think what they've done is that they've taken bits and pieces and they are imagining it from a business model perspective rather than a hardware or software innovation. Those are components of it, but really from a business model, but they've built a whole new innovation on innovative business model. And the mechanisms there are based in the cultural aspects of being very practical and taking what you can and building with it. So kind of combinatorial rather than conceptual. Yeah. And so I think those are the three kind of aspects. I haven't really talked about it in this way before, but I think those are three drivers of creativity and innovation in China that are just completely fundamentally different that you cannot replicate anywhere else. You can try and it's just going to be a lot harder and that's fine. But you're going to have to do it in your own way. And that, I think that's fine too. Yeah. But those three aspects.
That's fantastic. Do you know David Lee from...
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. So David, we had a podcast in Hebrew called Over the Wall about... we were talking about...
He's Hebrew?
No, he... Yes, he does. You didn't know that?
David Lee, huh? Yeah. I mean, David Lee could be. I know some David Lees in America that are not Chinese, but anyway.
Yeah, no, he does not speak Hebrew yet. The interview was in English, and the podcast was about innovation in China, and we were interviewing him about, you know, the Shanzai culture, the Shenzhen innovation open lab. Yeah, and he, I think the metaphor he used was rap or hip hop, right? Like kind of mixing things to make different things. And I remember I really liked that idea. Right. So, yeah.
That's so true. That's a good metaphor for it. I think, you know, spending time here, you realize that they, you know, while we care so much about the aesthetic, and I think we live in such a polished and a polished world, our expectations of what functioning is, isn't actually functioning. Especially, you know, I've fallen in love with design very, very much. And I realized that's kind of where, from a superficial level, that's not all design is, but from a superficial level, most people will see something that looks good and assume that it works. But I think in China, they don't have that automatic assumption because of the historical context. And also because they just are, they were makers themselves and they're problem solvers, right? So they just approach it from a different level. Very, very much bottom level. bottom
right line, exactly. So do you think they look at it from I guess, you know, for lack of a better word, like a monetary value? Like, I mean, it works if it sells rather than it works if it looks good, or it looks good then it works.
I think it works if it works, and then works if it sells. I think probably it works if it sells, then it works if it works, and then finally, eventually, it works if it looks good. Okay. So that's a great way to dissect that. Yeah.
So okay, you land in China in 2007. You launch Let's Make Great in 2013. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who are your clients in China?
Yeah, it goes back to relying on my strengths. I don't speak Chinese, and I certainly couldn't do all my public speeches in Chinese. And so a lot of my clients were multinational organizations. Kerry Food and Flavors, CNA, Todd's, Decathlon, HP, GE. I've done work for all of those organizations because they're all international organizations. I'm sure there's a lot more that I can't think of. Yeah. I apologize for all those that may be listening, but I think they're busy and they're focusing on this stuff, quite honestly. Yeah. So I have worked with those organizations, various departments within those organizations. And they primarily, what happens is I get connected to one person. They see me at a speech and they kind of resonate with what I'm talking about, my beliefs, my way of working, and my passion. And they realize that that's very much what is missing in their team. And so they invite me to come in to either facilitate a discussion for their team, to like instill that passion and train their team to have that kind of creativity. And or if they don't really, they just need the problem solved, then just hire me to solve the problem with my team. So those are the three kind of like services that I provide.
What sort of problems were you solving for them? Curious to.
So, as I'm explaining to you, I realize that I'm such not an innovation consultant. Because I don't come from that world, right? I'm explaining in such baby terms. Like I help people to solve problems, when they're missing passion, they ask me to come in and talk to their people. Very, very basic, very matter of fact and plain, right? Mm-hmm. And so what were the problems? I think my favorite problem was this client had an idea that they wanted to do research. And they wanted to gather up data, and they wanted a way to manage and understand the data, but and the research and the trends that were happening across the region beyond China, in Asia, and they gave me this brief, and they said, but we don't have the data. I don't know what the framework should be, and I'm not really sure what form this should take. Can you help us figure this out? And I was like, wow, that is so abstract, right? It's an idea about an idea about an idea.
Yeah, and meta, very meta.
Super meta, right? And I had to understand it. My team and I, we had to go out and figure it out. And that was my favorite project of all time. That's
okay.
And ultimately, well, I guess I should cut to the chase a little bit and tell more directly what it was. Basically, we needed to create a framework to help them understand what they were trying to build. And so we needed to visualize that for them. First understand it, then visualize it, and then create communication vehicles so that they could sell that and develop it internally.
Okay.
So that's what we did. So a lot of sketches, diagrams, PowerPoints, graphics that were able to put their ideas into form. And of course, by talking to them, we were analyzing it and started to propose different aspects of what they were talking about so they could, to really put our own spin to it. So yeah, that's my favorite project. It's still, even to this day, super abstract, but I loved it just for that.
Yeah, no, I was talking to someone the other day, and we were getting very meta in our discussion. I was like, okay, what is it that we do as innovators? And And he said, I think he said something like, we make the invisible visible for our clients. Yeah. And I think that's what you're getting at. If, you know,
I think that's a great way to put it. I think that's a lot more design than it is innovation. Mm-hmm. But I know what he's saying, and it does definitely connect to what I'm saying too, of course. I think the innovation side of it was, because it was a complete, it was basically a huge hole, a mental hole.
Yeah.
And a huge mental puzzle. We needed to piece it together. And I think that was the innovative side of it. To eventually, there was another component to this project where we needed to realize it. But the first part, the hardest part, was figuring out what we should be building. And I think that is the where imagination and empathy really is absolutely critical.
Fantastic.
You
know,
you can't have a talk on innovation without empathy, right? So
exactly.
So here it is. All right.
Well, hold on. We're going to get through the whole five stages of design thinking.
There you go.
Don't get ahead of yourself. No. So we're not going to talk about design thinking. But do you think that they were? Do you think that they were looking at you as the bridge between West and East in a way?
Some clients do, because I my team is local, and again, I'm Chinese American or American born Chinese, and so I let them. Again, I don't put any ideas into my client's head. I let them think what they want, and then I try to understand what they're trying to get at. Mm-hmm. And so if they want me to be the bridge, then I spend more time trying to be the bridge. It's not always the case though. I think sometimes the client just resonates with me because I'm American and I know where they're coming from and I know what they're trying to achieve a little bit more in that way. So yes and no.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Cause I've had a lot of it too. So some of the work that I was doing in Shanghai, mm-hmm. in Hong Kong was exactly that. It was like helping Western brands coming to into China. And you realize that it's a real, well, at least they understand that it's different. So that's a good place to be, right? That they need to forget everything that they were doing in the West and figure out a new strategy for China. Yeah. But then how do you do that? So
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's where people like us are really, really needed. You know, we're willing to explore, and we have that kind of willingness to let go of preconceived notions and test those assumptions, right? So, exactly right. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, it also a function of the time. From when I started to now. And it's less so now, but especially in 2013, there was a significant lack of talent in design and innovation at that time. And I think what's happened is that in China, I'd say. And so there were talented people. Just by sheer numbers, there are so many. But at the same time, are they working with Western companies? Probably not. How many are, right? And so that's why I think there was a shortage. And so that's why we were able to come in and fill that gap. Because now I would also say that I'm probably not the most needed guy. The people on my team are more important than me now. You know, I started off as just one guy and now I have a team of like four or five people and they, you know, I've been working with them for several years and I let them know that you guys are the next phase of not just let's make great, but the next phase of innovation in China.
Yeah.
You know, some of them were educated abroad. Exactly. Right. Some of them were educated abroad, but not all of them. And these, you know, if you talk about a bridge, these are the next stepping stones of that bridge. You know, we're trying to build it. You have to build from both sides. And I think that's what that's how I've been conceiving my team over the past couple of years was very much in this way.
Yeah, that's great. That's really important. That continuity. So I was looking at your Instagram and you posted an interesting animation of the word crisis transformed into catalyst, caption. Yeah. There are so many positives. If you want to see it, use crisis as a catalyst. So I'm into that. Yes. And I'm curious, how do you apply that to Let's Make Great? And can you think about ways of, some ideas about how our listeners might apply that philosophy in their own kind of challenges right now?
Yeah. You know, I think, first of all, I have to be very transparent. Yesterday was a very difficult day for me. I've been reading the news nonstop. I mean, I said several times already, but the crisis hit us in late January, and it's been nonstop, reading about it and living it for the past several months. But seeing that they are now building these kind of makeshift army hospitals in Central Park in New York City, and knowing that some of the people infected are from the neighboring town that my parents live in, I broke down yesterday.
Yeah.
So I just want to allow and say that, you know, I talk a big game, you know, use crisis as a catalyst, but it's not every moment, right? I think that's really, really important that we don't push this narrative of just like being productive with this time.
Yeah. So the way I was looking at it, and I'm glad you put that there, because I think it's a lot about how you frame things. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have to be very careful about how we frame this period in time in history. And the more people who are, you know, challenging that assumption, like, mm-hmm. you know, you have all the media shouting crisis, but you have to have people, a few people saying, okay, it's a catalyst. It's something else, right? I think it's going to help us move forward at the end of the day, because it's already happened. Like, we're in it.
Exactly.
Right? We can't change it.
Exactly. I think what this thing is, this virus and this pandemic and the whole reaction to it, the whole ripple effect to it, is illuminating our reactions, right? Illuminating our minds, basically. Because, you know, I see this almost as a Rorschach test. Remember, the funny ink blobs that psychologists show people? Like, this one looks like a butterfly. This one looks like a murderer or something like that, right?
Yeah.
You know, those funny gloves. This virus, because it's so new and so different and so kind of ambiguous and so invisible, it's intangible, inherently intangible, right? Practically intangible. That every society is reacting in a different way. And you can see how every culture, you can see on a cultural level, country by country, how they're reacting between China, Taiwan, China, Korea, China, Japan, Hong Kong. And then eventually the rest of the world, of course, you know, you see what's happening in Italy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You just look at it and you realize, like, this virus is so ambiguous. It's forcing us, it's revealing the depths of our minds. And that's on a country level and also on an individual level. And so just as an example, we were already looking forward to moving away from China at the end of this year and letting my team take over. This is just accelerating that. That's why I'm here in Lisbon trying to experiment to see if I could work remotely. And just to see if I like this city. Because I never planned to be here.
DM.
DM. And I think that's what I mean by as a catalyst. Like, right, whatever's going to happen, like, it's this virus, this crisis is a projection of your own mind. How you feel and how whatever you're thinking, you are given this weird opportunity to see and to do in this time to do something with it. Mm-hmm. You can use the virus as a cover to transform your life. You can use it and to consider, like, oh, actually, I don't really want to do whatever it is, right? And actually, what I do really want to focus on is this.
Yeah.
A, because you're locked up and you have so much time to think about it. Okay, cool. But B, you have just everybody is going through a transformation. I'm spending so much time talking to people, working through their own either business transformation or their individual transformation or their career transformation.
That's so true.
And so it's happening across the board.
Yeah.
use it as an excuse.
Yeah.
Right? It's fine. If you want to change, now is a great time to change. You have time, you have opportunity. And then on top of it, everything's going to be much cheaper. If you want some, you know, talent, people are more willing to do something because they need the money. You know, that's okay. You're working together. You're not taking advantage of them. Yeah. Hopefully not. Right.
They need something new. Exactly. They need something new to believe in.
They need
in.
A purpose too. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. And they're so, no one's going to remember what you did before. Like everyone's going to remember COVID-19. Exactly. That's it. No. So yeah, I agree.
It's life before and life after. So we have a chance to go through this rebirth, go through this rebuild. And that's what I mean by taking this as a catalyst rather than a crisis in itself. But of course, going back to what I was saying, if you do feel something, you know, reach out, get help, talk to people. It's a real serious thing right now. There's an emotional aspect to it that cannot be ignored. And then when you're ready, if you're ready, take this opportunity and step out and to reinvent yourself as much as possible, because this is a beautiful moment in time if you're willing to see it.
I couldn't agree more. That's fantastic. That's really great. So with that positive note, or on that positive note, before we wrap up, how can people learn more about Let's Make Great?
Yeah, the website's always good. You can always email me, brian@letsmakegreat.com. I'm very open-minded. I respond to most of my emails, if not all my emails. And I love talking. I think you can see that. I think they're people. That's the game. That's everything. Where your mind is at, how you feel about things. And being an entrepreneur, I think we are especially adept at dealing with uncertainty and taking advantage of opportunity. And being an innovator, I think it's the same thing. You have special acceptance of ambiguity. And I think people like us are more needed than ever. And so I'm very open-minded to talk to anybody. Again, that's Brian, Brian, at Let's Make Great. All one word, Let's Make Great. Let's Make Great is also my handle on Instagram and all that kind of stuff. So that's it.